So this quarter, if you weren't here last week, we got started talking about evidences for God. And that's pretty much the entire year is what we're going to be dealing with. But things I want you to gather from these lessons, because as I iterated several times last week, is these lessons do not have a whole lot of scripture to them. It's very science-driven, but there's a reason for that, because the lay individual, the individual that doesn't believe the Bible, will never, ever believe the Bible just because you said, this verse says this. That's not how we're going to get them there. But eventually, we're going to have to get them to the Bible, and we're going to have to start on their terms. So God has told us that He is all around. His nature is all around. We just have to search for it and find it. And that is part of this lesson. We'll be way better at doing that than, I guess, the last lesson. The last lesson was definitely more of a philosophical kind of idea of what is truth, and we'll get into that in a minute. But what I want you to really gather, though, from these lessons, that this should help increase your faith as we're going through these things. Because, yes, they are highly science-driven, but it's nothing that we can't understand if we don't try to understand it. We need to give God the glory He deserves because of His wonderful design that you'll see. And lastly, obviously, is we need to be able to bring people to God, the Bible, through secular thoughts that they would understand. So last week, what is truth? Does anybody remember? What is truth? Don't cheat. Josh? Yeah. It is what it is because that's truth. Right? Those are purple chairs because they are purple. And so on. So, you know, the most important questions that we had concerning truth include origin, identity, meaning, morality, and destiny. And we are going to be dealing with origin tonight. So, evidence for a first cause. Now, I will say, when I first saw this, I didn't quite understand, what do they mean by for a first cause? So, of course, I had to ask that question. What is a first cause? As the chapter expresses. It's a first cause.
What started
everything. And I think I was getting hung up on, you know, cause. What do you mean by cause? Well, something had to have caused all of this. And people tried to explain what caused all of this. What was it? And these are the things that we're going to go through tonight. We're going to go through four different possibilities, and we're going to go through each of them this evening. And the third one, which you'll see, we'll go through briefly, but we're going to cover that in a couple chapters from now. But what I have for evidence for first cause, I'll read for you, is first cause in philosophy, the self-created being, God, to which every chain of causes must ultimately go back. So every single chain of causes go back. Now, when you read Genesis 1, what is that? God is explaining how everything was caused. And it all goes back to what? In the beginning, God. It's all going back to that, the first cause. The term was used by Greek thinkers and became the underlying assumption of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Many philosophers and theologians in this tradition have formulated an argument for the existence of God by claiming that the world that man observes with his senses must have been brought into being by God as first cause. And we're going to go through that this evening. So what is the beginning of all things? Where did everything come from? Where did the trees, where did, you know, this air that we breathe, the grass, the birds, the animals, where did all of this come from? And before we get into that, we're going to read a little section by Bob Dutko. I think that's how you're pronouncing it. It says, this is on the first page of Lesson 2, page 8. So let's consider this before we actually answer, where did all of this come from? It says, in science, there's a law of physics called the first law of thermodynamics. Within it is a conservation of energy. That states as a key principle that all energy in a closed system must be conserved. Okay, fancy language, but what does that mean? It means that while energy can convert into matter, physical stuff, and matter into energy, however much total stuff there is, matter and energy, there can never be an increase that total amount or a decrease in that total amount. So however much total stuff there is in the universe, matter and energy combined, there can never have been more and never have been less. All it can do is convert to different forms, like matter to energy or energy to matter. But the total amount of all of this remains the same. So now in your own words, after I read that big lengthy paragraph, what is it? The law of thermodynamics. You guys didn't know you were going to have an intense science class here. Yeah? Yeah, simply. Nothing can be created or destroyed. It is what it is. That's where it is. The energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's just transformed into different kinds of energy. Yeah?
Well, maybe this is simple. It works. If I have 16 gallons of gas, if I never use it, I've got 16 gallons of gas. But if I put it in the car and drive 320 miles, there's no more gas.
Correct. Where did it go? So what do you have of the change in energy then from the gasoline? We know it ran out and you got to that place, but where did that energy go? Exhaust. Heat transfer. And heat is energy. But it's broken down. But it's never recreated with normal circumstances, I should say. All right, so this is what I have here. This is the apologetics website, which we've heard mentioned before, the elders have mentioned it before. This is actually where some of this stuff came from. This is one of their charts. It's pretty simple. Energy inputs in, and then you have some sort of process, and then you have energy output. And this is a closed system. And when we say closed system, you might get confused. Well, what does that closed system mean? Well, space and time and matter, we're all, believe it or not, in a closed system. Even space, as far out as we know it is, it's still considered a closed system. So that still means the same thing, that no matter what energy is, anything that we do with the energy, there's still going to be energy output. And that's going to be important for us to understand as we go through the rest of these lessons. So what's the big deal? Why is this important? Why is the law of thermodynamics important? Who cares? It's only being broken down, but it had a starting point. So that gives us beginning. Why else? From a secular standpoint, why is this important?
Can't have something come out of nothing.
Yes. We can't have something come out of nothing. And this, by all scientists understand the first law, and they do their work within it. So when we are teaching people of the world, they all believe this first law. So this is our starting ground for these individuals when we're teaching them. They understand what this is. They know that something can come from nothing. Excuse me. So that's where we have to start. Then how did we get to this point where we are now? Evolution? You're telling me I came from nothing? They know that's not true. So based off the first law of evolution, so we'll get into that in just a minute. So where then did all this come from? What kind of ideas do they have out there? What do people think all this came from? Just happened? What do we have? Yeah, some people just think it just happened.
The Big Bang, you had gases and energy, and it was already kind of a form of some sort, and then it just all blew up.
Yes, that's one theory out there. What are other theories that anybody knows? Illusion.
String theory.
I don't remember much about the string theory, but I remember hearing about it. That's pretty much it for me. What else?
Most logical, that something came from intelligence.
That is absolutely the most logical. And I, you know, you can just, I always like to go back to DNA because that makes the most sense. But we'll get into that some other time. This is not the point of that study. However, this is what the author had for this material. He just focused on these four things. It's an illusion. It's illusionary. That is, none of it really exists. You guys don't exist to me. It's just all made up. You're all made up. I'm nervous for no reason because you don't exist. It's always existed. That is, it's eternal in nature. It sprang from nothing, the Big Bang, which we'll get to. And it was created by an intelligent being, which is logical. So, to be true, this was kind of going back to our last lesson as well. It says, to be true, the answer you choose must be logical and reasonable, because we're dealing with truth here. So that still takes us back to lesson one. It cannot violate any known point of truth. With that in mind, let's examine each possibility. So, here's the question for you guys. Are the gray lines in this image parallel? What do you guys think? Do they look like they're sloping? Or are they parallel? If you look at it quickly, what's it look like? What's that? Yeah. When you first looked at it, did you think it was parallel? I sure didn't. I thought they were all sloping different ways. But they're definitely all parallel. That is a modern-day illusion, just with an image.
I don't even see gray lines. I see black and white.
Oh, man. The little guy right there. If you're colorblind, you still can see that. That's the idea of illusion, right? So, life is illusionary. That is, none of it really exists. And this individual, this is kind of on the bottom of this page. The first page is Michael Allison. I'm going to read the beginning of his quote and then skip down to another part of his quote on page 9, if you're following along with me. It says, reality isn't as plain and simple as we often like to think. Several things we take for granted as true are in reality patently false. Ever wondered what happens to things behind your back? Philosophers have studied this problem intently, and some have reached a simple conclusion. They vanish. That PowerPoint is not behind me. I guess it is. But that's what these philosophers have studied, that things just disappear. How illogical is that? It says, well, not exactly. Some philosophers known as, I'm not going to pronounce that right, phenomenalist, I guess, believe that things only exist in as far as they are perceived. In other words, your cheese sandwich that you ate this afternoon only exists so as long as you are aware of its existence. So as for trees that fall in forests with no one around to hear them, they don't. You guys have all heard that. Do trees make a sound and when they fall in the forest? What's the answer? They make a sound. And they do fall because we go run into them. I've heard it twice. So life is, it's an interesting thought, I guess, but, you know, not worth much of my time thinking about it. So why is life not illusionary? Why do you think that we can just throw that answer away? That can't be the beginning of things. What are some logical reasons? Yeah. I mean, really what they're describing is not illusion, it's perception. Because it's based off our senses.
Well, I mean, the law of gravity, if you want to test that, I mean, you'll find out real quickly that that's not an illusion.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody have anything else? Pretty easy one.
Thousands of shoes for Holocaust victims because
Yeah.
But there's people that say it didn't happen because they weren't physically there. It could be applied to many Jurassic situations. I wasn't in New York on 9/11.
How do we know? We have authors that have written about these things. We have evidences. We have authors that have written about these things.
We have pictures.
We have pictures. You know, people question, this is kind of going off topic, but people question Jesus. Well, we have several authors just right here, not only in our Bible, but outside of our Bible, that say, yes, Jesus did exist and these things actually happened. So why are we discounting these authors versus any other historical authors in the last 100 years? Makes no sense. All right, let's see here. So, like I said, remember these answers have to be come from logical and reasonable. Some of the things that I had thought about, why in the world would I want pain? If this is all an illusion, why would I want to feel pain? Why would I ever die? Why would I ever age? Why wouldn't I be a multi-billionaire, quadrillionaire? Why would I work? That's the easiest one to, obviously, to say. No, life's definitely not an illusion. Why would I ever go to school? Why would any of that need to exist? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, exactly. All right, so obviously life is not an illusion, so that's not the beginning of all things. We know that. So what's the next thing? It's always existed. It's eternal. So now in your own words, if anyone knows what it is, what is the second law of thermodynamics? Does anybody know? Yeah. So everything left to itself will come to its end. So basically, this is the same chart here. We have energy is being inputted into a process. You have, it might release more usable energy in some other form, heat. But what happens though is it's less usable. So it can't just create more. So what does that mean? It just constantly is breaking down. So why does this matter? Who cares? Things can't be eternal. Exactly. Mark?
If that law is true, then there was never a start to begin with.
Yeah.
Because everything goes to decay. That law says everything is one pattern to decay.
Yeah. Yep, you're right. So some examples, I guess, is will your paint job on your house maintain its fresh appearance over time? If the world was eternal, would it always be nice and beautiful? Yeah, that would be the answer. If we didn't believe in the second law of thermodynamics. Now, will your son's room or daughter's actually become cleaner on its own or stay the same amount of clean? Even if you shut the door and you never went in and they never went in, would it still be clean? If you didn't believe in the second law, yeah, but now since we know the second law exists, will it still be clean? If no one ever existed, or no one ever went in there? Might be a trick question. Yes. We still get dust and things. It doesn't matter. Things still break down, still decay. You leave a building alone. Have you guys ever seen those neat pictures where they leave buildings alone for tens and decades and come back? What happens? Do they still look beautiful and pristine? No way. Why? Because the second law of thermodynamics, and that's important because guess what? Every scientist understands this and they work within it. So we cannot say that life has never, it's eternal, I guess. Space, time, and matter are eternal. Why? Because everything's breaking down. And there's your word entropy, which you mentioned. That's another word they use for second law of thermodynamics is entropy. So everything is leading towards chaos. So if everything is left to itself because it has always been around, then everything would be running down. Energy would be harder to use. It would be in complete disorder. But that is not the case for us. We still have light, etc. We still have some order. Thus, the universe had a beginning. But we do realize that things are coming into disarray and disorder. Here's the third point that he makes. Is it sprang from nothing? It evolved. What's another word for that? Yeah, evolution. How did it start? What was the first cause of evolution that they say? Big Bang. So the Big Bang is considered their first cause. And that's how they get the explanation of evolution. And what's interesting is, as we, I don't want to go too much because I kind of want you guys to misstep. So when you're answering my questions, it's okay if you're wrong. All right? So here we got the theory of evolution, and we're going to skip that for now because we want to talk quickly about this, and then we're going to actually talk at length about the Big Bang. So obviously the third possibility is an intelligent being created it, and let's use logic here. Everything that had a beginning had a cause for that beginning. We proved that with the second law of thermodynamics. The universe had a beginning, therefore the universe had a cause for its beginning. What does all that mean? You can ponder on that and think about that. What does that mean?
It wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, it wasn't a mistake. What else?
Or a chance happened.
Yeah. Yeah, Dwayne?
Just like if I go out to my car and I just look at it, the engine's not going to start.
Yeah.
Right, I have to put my key in and start the engine. There has to be something that causes everything to start.
Yes. That is dead on. That is the only logical explanation. Daniel, you have something?
Just going to build on that.
Yeah.
So by the second law of thermodynamics, it's impossible for something to just have existed and then, you know, somehow stay in the state forever. Because it's like a building or something that we do, something that you establish it, someone has to build that, and that might decay over time. And then because of the first law,
so what you're saying is something outside of space, time, and matter has to exist in order for space, time, and matter to exist to see what we have today. Does that make sense? Some yeses? I know this is hard stuff to understand, but this is very important. Good. And it's hard to...
say, well, then we're not thinking logically, then if that's your definition of truth.
We'll answer some of that stuff. So what caused the beginning, and as I have pointed there, Christians are the only ones that have a logical answer. So we have to understand something, though, and this is on the top of page 10. This is another important factor to consider when thinking of the cause of beginnings, is drawing conclusions from ascertainable facts involves assumptions. And here is, such assumptions are reasonable. And this is uniformitarianism. I know these are some huge words, and they're big for me too. But the idea is, you can see with the principles, it's not quite the same that I have written down, or that's in your page, but I have something slightly different up here. It means the same thing, though. In geology, the doctrine suggesting the Earth's geologic processes acted in the same manner and with essentially the same intensity in the past as they do in the present, and that such uniformity is sufficient to account for all geologic change. This principle is fundamental to geologic thinking and underlies the whole development in science of geology. And it's not just the science of geology, it's all science. So what does that exactly mean? In other words, nothing comes from nothing, because if it did, then we would still have weird stuff happening today. Things would just pop up. All of a sudden, a person would exist. Or a weird animal would exist out of nothing. But they know that's not the truth. Why? Because things are the same today as they were 1,000 years ago, the way they worked. So if things haven't changed the way they work, then you can't just have a big bang out of nothing. Because if that were truth, then we would have another big bang out of nothing. Does that make sense?
We should have bigger
bangs. Yeah, bigger bangs. So let's get into the big bang now while we're talking about this. All right. So what do you believe that it is, based on what you've been taught in the past? It's okay. No grades here. Wayne?
Basically, just some sort of explosion that caused this rapid expansion of matter. Mm-hmm. And that out of that matter and that growth, you know, a tiny little something lived in the water that then, you know, came out of the water and had legs, and then, you know, changed from having legs to walking upright on two legs.
Yeah. So you fell into my trap. Thank you.
That's what I'm here for.
Perfect. So this is actually this guy here behind me. He wrote this little section on what the Big Bang is. So this is Dr. Jastrow, I believe is his name. It says, Dr. Robert Jastrow asserts that in the beginning, all matter in the universe was compressed into an all infinitely dense and hot mass that exploded. Over many eons, supposedly, the primordial cloud of the universe expands and cools, stars are born and die, the sun and earth are formed, and life arises on the earth. Dr. Jastrow is describing, of course, what is commonly known as the Big Bang Theory, and it does not require much critical acumen to conclude the concept is evolutionary to the core. And the reason why we've mentioned evolution is because they're basically saying that the stars had to have evolved, the universe had to have evolved, and that's how we can explain how life evolved on Earth, even though we're eventually going to prove that as false in the upcoming chapters. But for now, we're focusing on the first cause. So what are two problems with this guy's theory? Yeah.
What?
Exactly. Well, where did all this stuff come from? The egg. What's another simple issue with this?
What would have, you know, if that would be a closed system, because they've had this stuff and don't know where it came from, where did that come from? That's one. If we have this thing that would have been a closed system, according to that, it was everything in that.
Yes.
Then what changed to make it blow up? What? Because if you have a closed system and everything's in it, and it's just like that, then it would just, in theory,
So what is the stuff? So to Dwayne's point earlier is, where did the car come from? And then who put the key in the ignition to start the car to get it to do its work? That's the idea. So those are the two issues with this guy's theory. So other theories is the universe collapsed on itself and created another universe. Problem is the second law of thermodynamics, again, where did it all come from? And then the universe came from nothing, the egg laid itself. This is real. This is what people study and they get paid to study this stuff. The egg laid itself? It just doesn't even make sense. Think about the probability would be near infinite. I actually tried to find the probability. I was just thinking about all the factors, the proteins that we have, that we exist by, the DNA. The probability is near infinite to get to what we are. So think about that just from a mathematical standpoint. All right, the problems with the Big Bang. And this goes to our book here. It is a book, actually, online. So we have these facts that he points out. Explosions never, ever produce organized, intelligently designed structures and systems. That is true. I put misconception on there because that is what the belief of what the Big Bang theory is. And that was the old belief, but this is modern day times, you guys. We got to know what the Big Bang actually means now because it's changed. So we all think, as Christians, that the Big Bang was an explosion. Because that's what they said in 1970. That's what Dr. Jastrow said in 1970. Within the last 10 years or so, they decided, no, it was not an explosion. Okay, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. It's important for us to understand that because when we talk to people outside of church that believe in the Big Bang, they might be up to date on what it actually means. And if we say explosion, they're going to laugh at you because they realize that it's not what science says or that's not what science is telling them. So that's a misconception. Although it's true, explosions never ever produce organized, intelligently designed structures. That's a true fact. But that's not what the Big Bang is. That's what I meant by misconception. Explosions are known to propel matter outward from the center, never into systems which revolve, such as the Earth and many other planets. That is actually a fact. But again, I'm just putting misconception of, again, they don't believe anymore that was an explosion. And same for that third point, explosions always radiate destruction of anything in its path. That is a true statement. But again, that's not what the Big Bang is known for anymore, any longer. So here's the updated version of what the Big Bang theory is. You're not going to find this in your booklet because it's not in there. The Big Bang was not an explosion. Was not an explosion in space. As the theory's name might suggest, instead it was the appearance of space everywhere in the universe. Look, these were copy-pasted words here. I didn't type this up. What do you guys notice on that first one? What are you thinking? Just appeared. Now, we might chuckle, but that's a good thing when we hear stuff like that. What does that make you think of? Genesis 1:1. Things appeared. Well, why? In the beginning, God. Oh, number two. This is an interesting one here that they say. I don't know how they came up with this. I'm sure the math is crazy. But when the universe was very young, something like a hundredth of a billionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second, okay, it underwent an incredible growth spurt. During this spurt of expansion, which is known as inflation, the universe grew exponentially and doubled in size at least 90 times. It doubled in size at least 90 times in a hundredth of a billionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second. Now, I don't know how they came up with that, but what does that sound like? Explosion. So I could see how that they would see this as an explosion, but we'll get to, there's going to be a good point I'm going to make later about that. So basically, they don't understand, but it wasn't an explosion anymore. But they know it just, their theory is it just happened to exist. What does that make you think of again? God spoke. Thank you. Oh, I'm glad somebody else got that out of it. God spoke it into existence. I'm not saying that their theory is right, but it's kind of leading into God.
Probably
stop.
Slow down and stop.
Well, either way, it looks like an explosion initially. And that's why they call it the Big Bang. The third one is the light chemical elements were created within the first 3 minutes of the universe's formation. However, the intense heat from the universe's universe creation made it essentially too hot for light to shine. And then the era of recombination, which is after the above, was followed by a period of darkness before stars and other bright objects were formed. Why did I put this on here, do you think? Does anybody remember? Yeah, it's Genesis. Because if you read Genesis, if you really think about it, God developed light, and then later, he developed sun. And then it's like, whoa, wait a second. How did the sun get there? Well, light was still there. But if you look at the actual Greek words, there's a difference between the light that God created initially and then the sun. And what the sun is just a light-giving source. It's the difference. So it is interesting that they actually say within the first 3 minutes, which would be the first day, the light would shine. What do we see Genesis 1? What do we see? Light was created the first day. I'm not saying their theory is right. I'm just saying it keeps alluding back to God. That's all I'm saying. So here's their questions that they have about the Big Bang that they don't understand, that they need answered. They don't know where all of the stuff came from, the ball of matter. Did the egg lay itself? They don't believe it was an explosion, but a really fast expansion, a billionth of a trillionth. That's considered a modern day explosion. Where did space and time come from? They don't know. So do Christians have answers to these questions? Can you answer each of them? Genesis 1, we have an answer for that one. Second one, God spoke it into existence. Third one, again, Genesis. So we have the Bible's explanation here. It all started in Genesis as perfect order. Genesis 1, 1 through 18. And then with regards to the second law of thermodynamics, it has been in a steady state of chaotic disorder ever since Genesis. And that is just an idea of mine, because obviously God created everything. What did he say afterwards? It was good. It was very good. And then it became disorder. All right, I'm going to start kind of flying through this stuff. Genesis 2, 16 through 17, we can see here, it says, "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, you may surely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge and of good and evil you shall not eat. For the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." So beforehand, everything was perfect, everything was good. We're not going to die. And then what happens? Genesis 3, 6. "So when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and that was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make, she ate it." And what happened? Second law of thermodynamics. Just a theory of mine of when it all started. Makes sense. We were in perfect order before, and then we weren't after that. I'm going to skip that. So the universe is composed of three inseparable components, space, time, matter. It was all intelligent, created. We're going to look at the order here. And Genesis 1, everybody turn there. I know we all know it, but everybody turn there. Just to prove that I'm not crazy here. I believe I've said this before. Maybe in a class or something. We have in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay? So in the middle there it says, first we have beginning, which is time. Because space and matter can't exist without it. That is why it is listed first. You cannot have space and matter without time. Secondly, you have heavens, which is considered space, because matter can't exist without that. And then thirdly, you have earth, which is matter, something to fill the space. So in that order and written in that order, explain to me how the author of Genesis got that correct the first time without having any scientific knowledge about space, time, and matter. And to put it in the correct order. So not only did he describe the three fundamental things that every scientist understands as truth, space, time, matter, he got them in the correct order. I'm sorry, but that's pretty incredible. How do you discount that? He also goes into mentioning the triunity of some of this stuff, which is pretty interesting here. So we mentioned about what is outside of space, time, and matter. Outside of space is omnipresent. Outside of matter is spiritual. Outside of time is eternal, which all explains God. So how did we get first cause? Who was the first cause? Something that had to have been outside of space, matter, and time. And these are the very three things that we see listed in the Bible all the time. Omnipresent, spiritual, and eternal. And that is our God. I'm talking about this God. No other God can say that. Because the other gods that exist are a part of this world. And we don't have enough time to talk about that. Sorry, I'm skipping here. I guess I had more than I thought. Space, this is kind of an interesting point too, I thought the author made. Space represents God the Father, the invisible, omnipresent background, which we can see in Romans 1:20. Matter represents Christ, the visible, present among us. You see that Philippians 2? Time represents the Holy Spirit, reveals events in the universe, thus helping us understand it in John 14:26. That's what we understand is what the Spirit does for us. And then you can break it down even more. The space is composed of length, width, height. Matter composed of gas, liquid, solid. Energy is composed of kinetic, thermal, potential. Time is composed of past, present, future. What do you guys notice here? Three of everything. And it's consistent. What do we usually say if we see something consistent like that all throughout the world? From a scientific standpoint, if we keep seeing the same thing over and over and over, it's designed, exactly, it's designed, and there's truth to that. If that doesn't kind of blow your mind a little bit, check your pulse. So, all this could not have happened by chance. That's clearly it's designed. The first cause. As Christians, we have the answer to that. Now we got to bring this information. I know it's a lot of science stuff, but reread this stuff and explain this to, you know, people around that understand these as laws. And then next week, we're going to be talking about evidence for God. So thank you guys for your time. Sorry we had to skip some slides.